All right, rejoining this for this segment is our old friend, Jerry Rose. Jerry, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Of course, a few weeks back, Jerry told us the most interesting story about his being at the ball game when Bonds hitting the 71st home run and actually catching it, which was quite a tale. But I thought today we ought to go back to how it is you and I first crossed paths.
Dare we?
I think so. You know, I think we should promote travel, I think, on this program, at least on occasion. I don't think Americans get out as much as they should. When they do, they tend to go to, like, Club Meds. They take cruises. And I think that, you know, adventure travel, getting in, out in the sticks somewhere, out of the way, out of the usual beaten path, it's probably good for people. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree very much. The only way to go.
So, here you and I were in La Paz, Bolivia. I'd gone down there specifically because, well, 3 years before that, I witnessed an eclipse in Mexico, and I was just flabbergasted at how cool this spectacle was, and thought, maybe I could join this rank of people who just plan their international travel around getting the free show in the sky at this time. And so, 94 was going to be a good shot for Bolivia. Went down, went into a travel agency, and was talking with the day before I'd been there, and the travel agent looked at me and said, oh, well, this fellow here, he's from California. And you looked at me and said, what? You said, where are you from? Which city?
Yeah. And it turns out we were stone's throw from one another here in West Sacramento.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit of an odd coincidence.
A very odd coincidence. Thousands of miles from home. I happened to be in Chile fishing and knew of the eclipse. That wasn't my sole reason for going down there. But the more I heard about it and talked to people, I got pretty jazzed and found myself in La Paz. And so be it, at the same travel agency.
Looking about how we could get a tour to go see the show in the sky.
Yeah, pretty wild.
Now, oddly enough, someone else had bopped into that travel agency, some Dutch kids who were planning to, just passing through, oh, an eclipse. Oh, well, that's kind of mildly interesting. We're going to go up to Copacabana there at the lake and hang out. And I just said, you guys can't do that. You can't take a few days out of your travel because you only get a 99% eclipse.
Right.
And maybe we should explain to people that that just doesn't count.
That doesn't count at all. No, you got to be in totality.
Yeah, having even a sliver of sun is basically still daylight. You have to completely eliminate that solar surface to get that strange twilight phenomenon. Well, they wound up taking me up on it. And that was one of the great moments, I think, as you and I went out to this, after laborious journey we should tell about, to get out to the center line and where the eclipse would be. Afterwards, they kind of made a point to look at me and say, thanks, because we'd have missed this, and we had no idea what we were going to miss.
It was. I mean, as it came together, it was quite amazing. Hooking up with the right people at the right time, somehow we ended up with some guy that was in the Bolivian National Guard or National Army, friend of the travel agent, who certainly knew his way around the country. And actually, we took off on a trek in three or four Jeeps, hauling our own gas, water, provisions, and took off to the Altiplano. Yeah. Spent the first night in an actual army barracks, yes, in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, we did. Accommodations were rather Spartan, sleeping on the floor with army blankets. We should explain, maybe. It was typical third world travel. It was days in advance, thinking like, I want to be on the road days in advance, because you know how it is in the third world. There's what, about 100 miles of paved road in Bolivia?
I didn't see much of it, if there was any.
There's a town called Oruro, about 100 kilometers away. I think we got that far on asphalt, and then it was dirt, bouncing along in the dirt. And, of course, we wound up with, like, what, about a three-day lead to get there. We actually, in fact, wound up getting to the eclipse site, like, 2 hours before.
We thought we had plenty of time. And, actually, we certainly did take the scenic route. It's your own definition of scenery. But, yeah, it turned out being quite beautiful. Made a number of great friends. You're right. We pulled in just in time for the eclipse.
We should just try and paint a picture if we can about what it's like to see one of these things. But the journey, of course, is a cultural experience as well. And we're talking about Bolivia, land of the Inca, land of the sacred Inca plant, which in our curiosity, now I know I probably shouldn't admit to this. Yes, I should admit to this because it's a cultural thing. Everybody in Bolivia, among the lower classes anyway, people that are laborers, are chewing coca leaf. So I went to the market, I brought back a large baggie filled with coca leaf, and then asked our driver, how do you do this? Because it's like a cup of coffee. And weren't you offered a cup of mate de coca when you first got there?
Mate de coca, it's very good to settle your stomach, yes, at the high altitude.
Because you land in La Paz at 12,000 feet. Mm-hmm. So you're right away, you're suffering a little bit of giddiness from being so high, and that's the solution, drink a little bit of this coca tea, very refreshing.
Yes, it is.
And it was originally Coca-Cola had this in it. It's now been replaced by caffeine. For my money, if you take a really concentrated big dose of caffeine, it kills you. Whereas in this country, people are smoking crack using very high doses of cocaine, which is unbelievably refined. It literally takes 100,000 pounds of coca leaf to make the drug of abuse here in America, cocaine. So you're getting very microscopic doses, but I couldn't resist chewing a little bit of this to see what it was all about. And it was a mild lift, mildly entertaining. And how did we look to you as you were watching the rest of us chew this stuff?
As I recall it, you went into one store and got a bag of cocoa leaves, but then you went into another store and came out with sticks of dynamite with blasting caps.
No, that's later in the story.
Oh.
Getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, that's the part I recall.
Yes, traveling Bolivia is not like traveling in most...
Entertainment. When it gets a little slow, just go buy some dynamite.
Well, now I've got to tell that story. I wasn't planning to go there, but we'll have to circle our way back to that one. Anyway, we chewed the coca leaf. It's really no more of a drug than is a cup of coffee. I mean, you get a very low dose of this stuff. It wakes you up. The people like to use it. The guy, our driver, when I pulled out the bag and looked at him and said, okay, how do you do this? I'll never forget the look on his face. The surprise and amusement in his face as he's like, okay, I got to give a lesson to the turistas as to how to do this. You take a little thing called the laguilla, which is a bit of clay and ash. Put it in your cheek, put it up there, and that basically, in essence, makes a small amount of cocaine that can be absorbed into your system. Otherwise, you can chew it all day and nothing happens. So we chewed this, stayed awake, which was good because it was a long, arduous journey, dusty journey until we got there. You remember, like, looking out to the west as the eclipse was coming?
Yeah, I mean, up where we were, the Altiplano, there were volcanoes in the distance, and actually snow-covered volcanoes.
Yes, across the border into Chile.
With the eclipse, we were not only there to see the moment of totality, but everything that led up to it. And it was, you're right, quite magical being there in the Andes, where according to the local tradition was the actual jaguar was eating the sun god.
Yeah.
And so this was quite an event.
Right.
It was very spiritual.
Interesting mix of foreign tourists like us and locals.
Locals with kind of the fear of wrath in their eyes. Preparing for another, very, very big event.
Now, of course, an eclipse comes on incrementally, bit by bit, rather gradually. And yet there comes a moment when that last bit of sun is gone. From where we were looking west, which is the direction from which the eclipse was coming. And it's roaring at us at like 2,000 miles an hour, this cone of darkness. As we're looking to the west, well, what happened?
The first thing was on the volcanoes. Because the reflection of the sun was gone, the first thing happened was the snow, the gleaming of the snow in the distance disappeared.
Yeah.
And then the mountains seemed to disappear. They didn't quite disappear. They darkened very much because of the lack of sunlight.
Right.
And then the shadow starts running at you. And you get a very, very quick impression about how small we are in this whole universe and how quickly we're whizzing through things. You feel the eclipse come over you. I think there's, light wave, sound wave, something. I mean, there's more to it than just what meets the eye.
Yeah, and there's also, I think, a gasp erupts from the crowd. It gives this strange sound as everyone just goes, oh. And you're looking up and it's this pinkish, dark twilight. And it's not night. It's not true, like, midnight night.
Yeah.
But a twilight, because, of course, there's sunlight. You're in the center of this circle in, like, 80-mile, whatever it is, 100-mile wide dot. On the perimeter of it, there is sunlight. So you're in like a deep twilight, but it's something.
It is. It is. And again, back to I think most people have witnessed, the Andean musicians with the flutes and mandolins and all, and to have those people playing and then all of a sudden just cease when this occurred and go in awe and gasp, you're right, at the occurrence is really, was very powerful.
It certainly was. It was all over too quickly, too. I think that was a four-minuter.
That was a long one.
Yeah, we should explain that a long eclipse, I mean, the maximum theoretically possible is only 7 minutes.
Yeah.
So
are around two.
Yeah, two or three. Mm-hmm. So after this momentous experience, I was very happy. Of course, my camera jammed, literally 5 minutes before the eclipse arrives. The camera that's been serving me well for the past 15 years gives up the ghost right at that moment. And then we took off across the countryside, across, if you look at like even satellite photos of South America, you see a big white dot down near the southern part, which is the Salar de Uyuni, which is a giant, like the Bonneville salt flats, kind of a huge salt plain, evaporated lake. you and I were the next day tooling across it.
Again, yeah, we were off in the Jeeps, continuing our scenic journey with the assistance of our travel guide. She was along for the ride, though. I don't know how much she knew about the travel industry, but fortunately, we had the gentleman from the Army Guard there, and they took good care of us.
Yes, they did, although they weren't very good at navigating. I remember looking at you at one point as we're going across this huge salt plain with, plain with nothing to navigate off of, looking at the map going, we're heading way off.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I look at each other like, what are they doing?
Because
as pilots, you can read a map well enough to at least get an idea where you're supposed to be heading. And they were way off.
But we ended up at the Salt Hotel.
A hotel made of salt. They dig the salt out of the lake and make the walls.
Furniture. Beds.
Benches. Everything out of salt chunks. So then I guess the day after that, we wound up at the dynamite scene. We went to the city of Potosi and a mining community that basically kept the Spanish Empire in silver for three centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we should tell you that they recommend that the tourist buy dynamite and ammonium nitrate to go into the mine and then basically give it as a gift to the miners, some of whom the poor impoverished laborers are still working out what's largely a played out mine. They can still earn a living by, you know, working out some of the tailings, I guess.
Yes.
And so we did, gave them some dynamite, and remember, like, they were suggesting blowing it off while we were there.
Well, actually, they did let a charge off while we were in the mountain.
Yes, they did.
It's a little amazing.
I was thinking this is not such a good idea.
No. They've been blasting and digging in this hill for several hundred years, and they're still digging holes and blasting. Something's got to cave in somewhere. And so, yeah, we're crawling through, and we're watching them pack the dynamite in, which is kind of a sight. If you've never witnessed it before, no blasting cap on it yet, but still, you know, seeing some guy with a metal rod ramming a hunk of dynamite into the wall and hammering it, you know, gives you a little bit of the bejeebers, especially when you're about 2 feet from it.
It certainly did to me, thinking you're in an enclosed cave-like space that, yeah, you know, magnifies the effect of an explosion.
Mm-hmm. And then it was kind of like, they set the cap, and it was like, time to get out. We were hoping, okay, give us a little bit time to get out, and... fortunately, they gave us enough, but it was still, it rattled the walls around us and dust, and it was quite the experience.
It certainly was, and I didn't realize this, but Potosi mines, basically, they killed something like 8 million people, mm-hmm, over 300 years of colonialism by bringing in labor and basically not feeding them, yeah, giving them coca leaf, and when they were done, they would toss them out and get new ones. I kind of think that this can't be true. They said that when they ran out of natives, they imported African slaves, and that a lot of them, some of them got away and went down to the lower parts of the country,
mm-hmm,
and there were villages of basically Africans, and I just thought, I've never heard this.
Mm-hmm.
But by God, there it was.
True.
I've heard that it really kept them afloat, the Spanish, for 300 years. There was, mm-hmm, so much silver coming. It was the richest silver mine, I guess, on Earth. Well, I don't know that we're doing this whole journey justice in running around the wilds of Bolivia, but it really was something that, you just don't normally do.
Not at all. I've been on a lot of what people would call adventure travel, but this was adventure playing it by ear. You know, it takes a bit of luck and a lot of flexibility and a good sense of humor. You can have a hell of a good time.
I'm confessing to a lot in this segment. I have to confess, I convinced our drivers into driving along at about 30 miles an hour and getting the trucks close enough to one another to where you could actually leap from one onto the other,
yes,
which I did to fulfill fantasies of childhood watching guys leaping on the stagecoaches. I always wanted to leap from one rolling vehicle to another.
Another slow moment on the trip.
But by God, I think you should do that once in your life.
At least.
We have to tell the story about Turkey after this at some point, in some future month, about the trip over to there.
Definitely. Beautiful.
We saw another eclipse, and you actually recorded on video, which we still have.
Yes, we do.
Which is quite something. And, you know, my dad was able to, I wanted him to go over. He was ailing late in life and I wanted him to see an eclipse. And he unfortunately was not able to do so. But he was able to see your footage from Turkey that I think, you know, certainly gave him a taste of it.
Pretty close.
So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
All right. Jerry Rose, thanks for coming again. This was Radio Parallax on KDBS 90.3 FM. Please stay tuned for Gina, as she gives you her eclectic selection of interesting music. I'm Douglas Everett. We'll see you again next Thursday at 5 o'clock.
Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. birds singing in the sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me while I'm alone and blue as can be. Dream a little dream.